Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Elish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert for the next 90 minutes. We will be joined by Greg Wyshynski, Tim Reynolds, Eric Smith, and Paul Jones as we tee up tonight's action and look ahead to the weekend. We're officially less than 1 week to the NHL deadline, so keep our notifications on in case anything happens during our show. Lots of moving pieces, and maybe we get something fun tonight on a Friday night.
Yeah, lots going on. I think the conversation's like officially real a week out, so hopefully some action this weekend to dive into next week, and then, yeah, busy shows next week would be lovely. Busy hoops night on the network tonight. Lots of good teams in action. In fact, the best teams are in action. Cavs, Boston, Knicks, OKC, Memphis, Clippers, Lakers. Yeah, Sportsnet Plus might be the place to be if you're a hoops head tonight.
Yeah, Tim Reynolds will help us tee that up around 6:40 tonight. We'll go through all of that with him, our buddy Tim. It's been a little while since we chatted with him. So we will go through it all in about 40 minutes. But let's kick things off with Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer at ESPN, who joins us. Greg, I hear you might be at the airport en route to the Stadium Series. Is that right?
Yeah, beautiful Newark, New Jersey, the airport here. It's an international airport, but I won't be needing the international flights to go to beautiful Columbus, Ohio.
Gorgeous.
For the Stadium Series this weekend. Actually, it's fun. I was just talking to somebody from the Blue Jackets the other day, and I have said now for many years that if this franchise could ever figure itself out, and by that I mean, like, you know, make the playoffs in two consecutive seasons, I really believe that Columbus is going to pop. Like, that's a market that has a world of potential for like local enthusiasm to circle around this team. And I like the fact that they're building through the draft. They've got good young players. Like, that's the way you kind of rope in a generation of fans. So I joked about it because I'm, you know, cynical. I'm in New Jersey, but I do love Columbus as an NHL market. And I think it'll be great when the Blue Jackets are great.
I'm sure you've been to a lot of outdoor games in your career, Wish, and you're not there yet. But, you know, this venue, home of the Buckeyes, could be one of the best ones, just kind of conceptualizing it in my head.
90,000 fans are supposed to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, we're going to have probably the second largest crowd we've ever had for one of these games. I am intrigued to see what the split of fans ends up being. I've heard that it is a very locally driven crowd, like a lot of Columbus fans. And I thought that the whole, you know, Michigan Wolverine OSU type rivalry thing might have some Detroiters shipping in for this game, but it does sound like it's going to be a pretty heavy Columbus crowd and Buckeye crowd. But, you know, yeah, I've been to my share. I am excited about this one, new venue, you know, the Blue Jackets being in the game for the first time. It's it'll be fun, and again, like, the collegiate atmosphere sometimes is a really great thing for these outdoor games. One of my favorite Winter Classics remains the Cotton Bowl game that they had between Dallas and Nashville. I thought that venue was dope, and I thought the crowd was into it, and it felt different than, you know, the 85th variation of the same Major League Baseball ballpark that these things can sometimes be held in.
Yeah, and like the two teams playing in Detroit and Columbus, maybe earlier in the season when this was announced, you weren't so sure about it, but they're both fighting for those wild card spots, so definitely having a little bit of action on the line in terms of the result as well. Okay, let's shift to a couple games that we've got tonight and across the network this evening. Leafs and Rangers, we're looking at that one right after us here on Sportsnet. So Rangers kind of climbing back into relevancy here, I think, maybe just outside the playoff window. Obviously, 7 days or less at this point until the trade deadline. Like, what needs to happen for the Rangers to capitalize on what's been a really positive push over the last bit when it felt like they were kind of out of it?
Yeah, I mean, they just keep on keeping on. I mean, you know, the interesting thing is, I thought if they got back into it, it'd be on the strength of Shachurkin, and that's obviously not necessarily been the case. I think you look at their roster and you look at the other teams that are currently in the bubble mix in the East, and I still think the Rangers, despite some pretty significant flaws in their lineup, are still a cut above. The more intriguing thing for me as we get closer to the trade deadline is, you know, is Chris Drury, their GM, looking at the standings or going over his notes about how much he doesn't like the composition of this team? You know, you think about some of the players that could potentially move, a Chris Kreider, for example, and some others that are part of the core that, you know, Drury has already tried to reshape by trading away Jacob Trouba earlier in the season. So, you know, how does he view this team? Does he view it as one that could be a playoff team, and then once you get your lottery ticket, you play to win? Or does he view this team as something that is inherently flawed and the process must continue to keep reshaping it, which is where you'd see maybe a Kreider, maybe you see a Ryan Lindgren, or other players move at the deadline?
No chance the Toronto Maple Leafs will be selling, but I think the questions whether or not about the roster for the Rangers in some ways apply to the Maple Leafs, whether it's worth really investing in this group and making sure that you're taking significant portions of the futures capital to invest in this season. When you look at the Leafs' wish, does this seem like an all-in season for you?
Oh, I think without question, right? I mean, I think the way the East is opened up right now, where, you know, listen, I think Florida, and we all agree that Florida is still a force to be reckoned with, but I think the overall roster they have is diminished from what they had last year. I think every other team in the East has some significant flaws in their lineup and points of concern. I think the East is there for the taking for the Leafs this season, especially with Boston, their tormentor off the board, hopefully, and not having to worry about them in the playoffs. So, you know, I do think that they should be aggressive at the deadline and try to improve. I do find it interesting that it seems like St. Louis is trying to put the word out through every proxy that they have that if the Leafs want Braden Schenn, they're going to up the ante a little bit. That seems like I've read that from 17 different sources today on social media. So we'll see what they end up doing. But I do agree that I think this is clearly a season where they should try to push in some chips and go for it. I think they've got the goaltending. They've got the forward group. You know, I think this is the Eastern Conference is by no means spoken for at this point.
Yeah, I think everyone's weighing the amount of chips the Maple Leafs can push in and if it's worth it. But I think you're right about the Eastern Conference, a little bit less of a juggernaut to go through. And maybe the Leafs feel like this is the time to push them in. We're talking to Greg Wyshynski, NHL writer at ESPN. Okay, let's look around the NHL trade deadline. I think the best part, the best place to start would be with Mikko Rantanen. You know, it's been an interesting week. It's been an interesting couple of weeks, I guess, since he became a Carolina Hurricane. Like, how do you think this one plays out? There's a couple options on the table, but in the end, if you're looking in your crystal ball 7 days from now, is he moving on or staying put or maybe extending?
I just can't. Listen, I know that we have to defer to the genius of Eric Tolsky, who's smarter than 10 of me put together, but I can't conceive a world in which you trade Natchez and what they traded to acquire Rantanen simply to get a negotiating window with him until the trade deadline. Like, you bring in Mikko Rantanen because you truly believe this guy is a play-driving, playoff-altering asset to your forward group, and whose postseason pedigree is second to none as far as his offensive output. And the Carolina Hurricanes kind of being in the same boat that they've been in, where, you know, one goal in one of these close games could put him in the Stanley Cup final. So, you know, maybe there's a reality in the multiverse where they don't get a deal with him done and they're pretty convinced he's going to walk at the end of the year. And then they flip him for, you know, 75 cents on the dollar as far as the talent they get back for him. But ultimately, like, I think they make the trade to try to win the cup. And I think that having Mikko Rantanen on your roster gives you a better chance of that happening than, you know, flipping them and getting a couple assets that aren't going to add up to being Mikko Rantanen.
Wish Tulski might have like multiple PhDs, but I think you'd have a better idea if Rantanen was going to re-sign with your group after acquiring him, being that you're the hockey guy that you are. So I give you more credit than that. looking forward here, like, I think the NHL might be suffering from a slight lack of elite team syndrome. But two teams in each conference have certainly emerged in Washington and Winnipeg. You know, when the final looks too obvious, it generally never happens. But between Washington and Winnipeg, you know, both these teams seem to be contemplating not doing much because the mix is so good. But when you look at one of these options, like, which one stands out as you got to do something because this could be a really special year, but you might not be there yet?
I think the answer is probably Winnipeg. I got to be honest. Like, I think the Capitals are great. And they could win the cup, although I've yet to meet anybody who thinks they will. And that's the funny thing about both these teams is, like, everybody's on the Edmonton tip and everybody's on the, you know, Carolina or Florida or even the Leafs, but you rarely meet anybody that's like, oh, it's Winnipeg's year, you know, because they've lost the first round of consecutive seasons in five games. In the Capitals case, I think people are still getting over the surprise of them even making the playoffs last year. And then, you know, trying to figure out how they've been able to put together this regular season and not really believing it. Of the two, I'd say it's Winnipeg for me. I mean, I think their numbers overall, and if you look under the hood, they're a bit more impressive than the Capitals are. You're going to assume that Hellebuck is the player that we saw, say, in Four Nations than the player that we saw in the first round last year. And just overall, I mean, this is a really impressive group. And I think the other thing about them that I really like, and this is from something that I wrote about them earlier this season, the playoff disappointments have given them a real clarity on their regular season success. They obviously are very pleased with the way the regular season has gone, but in no way, shape, or form are they assuming anything when it comes to the postseason because of how the last 2 years have gone. They've had good regular season teams before, maybe not this good, but then they've entered the playoffs and didn't have the fundamental advantages that they need in order to win a playoff series. And I think that they're really going to approach this thing in a different mental way. And I think that's going to be a real benefit for them in the postseason.
Why do you think nobody thinks that the Capitals are going to win the Stanley Cup?
But I don't know. Like, it's they are so good and they have such a variety of ways to win. Maybe it's just a case of, you know, thinking about the Ovechkin we saw against the Rangers in the playoffs last year. Like, maybe the tank will have hit empty at some point, or maybe it's the idea that, you know, the incredible performances they got from Chychrun and Dubois this season, a mirage, where the young players won't be ready. I couldn't tell you why the Washington Capitals aren't, like, front of mind as far as, like, who's going to win the cup. But if you surveyed, like, 100 hockey fans, like, how many of them would say Washington versus, say, the Oilers, or versus, say, Vegas, or versus, say, like, Colorado? Like, it's kind of crazy that they've been this good, and yet I don't think that they're necessarily front of mind as far as a team that could win the cup. And that might be even in the case, last time I checked, at least in the sports books as well, as far as teams that could win.
Yeah, strip them into parts, and it's like they're built almost exclusively of guys that you have questions about. You kind of name them already. Yeah. PLD, Chychrun, Strome, Ovechkin this late in his career, but they've come together to form something pretty magical this year. But yeah, the playoffs are a little bit different, and we'll see if the same success translates. I think there are similar questions for this version of the Oilers. I mean, we look back at the offseason, it's like, you know, the Broberg-Holloway thing was disappointing, but wow, look what they did on the first day of free agency and how they didn't take anything from their group. They were able to add. They look like a finished product already, and then they have that blow with the offer sheets. And then this year, at times, it hasn't looked overly impressive. It has looked downright depressing the last couple games. McDavid is having, on his standards, a pretty underwhelming season. Like, are the Oilers further away than, you know, we gave them credit for ahead of the deadline here, just maybe a couple weeks ago before the Four Nations? It feels like suddenly they have some things that they kind of need to address.
Yeah, and usually that's covered up by how much McDavid and Draisaitl can drag them to wins on their own in the regular season, where some of those concerns are eased. But like you said, you're not seeing it on the same consistent basis as you normally do in the regular season. I mean, obviously, I think it's a diminished lineup than what we had last year. I think it's also a case where, you know, under Chris Knobloch last year, they were playing really outstanding hockey defensively and just overall after he took over, where they were just rolling. And you don't get the same sense. And any other part of this, too, which is undeniable, is that, you know, they made the Stanley Cup final last year with Stuart Skinner not being a liability. And do we believe that to be the case for four rounds again this year? I certainly don't think he's done much in the regular season to convince you that he could, you know, do the same thing twice. So then the question becomes, you know, will they be aggressive? Will they try to upgrade the goaltending position? Will they go after John Gibson? Will they, you know, somehow charm Doug Armstrong into surrendering Jordan Binnington, who all of a sudden we remember can do some pretty good goaltending in clutch situations? I think that they need to do something next week to convince us that maybe they could make a return trip, because right now it doesn't feel like the same team, like you said, as it was last year.
Yeah, it's felt a little stale, and certainly far worse than stale the last couple games. Last one, at least for me, Greg, the biggest name player you are confident will get dealt over the next 7 days?
Oh, that's a good question. I was going to say Brock Nelson, but then, you know, the Islanders are kind of still hanging around, and I don't know if Lou Lamoriello could be trusted to do that, even though he should. But I'll stick with Brock Nelson. I just think that, you know, as a last piece of the puzzle guy, and with teams like reportedly the Minnesota Wild really after him, you know, I just feel like it makes too much sense for them to move him and not try to like extend somebody of his age on a roster that's already trended pretty old. So, I mean, it's kind of a cheat. It's an expiring contract, but I would say probably Brock Nelson is the one I'm most confident about. I would say the one I'm clearly most curious about is Brad Marchand, where, you know, I don't think anyone, I've been asking around, and, you know, even though people are kind of reading the tea leaves to say, well, he said, you know, things about what the team will look like next year. I mean, I don't think that portends anything. I don't think anyone really knows what Don Sweeney and Cam Neely are thinking insofar as what this roster needs to look like next year. And for all of the people that remember the sentimentality that surrounded Patrice Bergeron and the loyalty that they had to him, you don't have to look too far back to remember the way Ray Bourque went down, the way Zdeno Chara went down, to know that at the end of the day, it's going to be what's best for the Bruins. And there's going to be a ton of teams that if he all of a sudden became available, would quickly be in the Brad Marchand business come next Friday.
Yeah, I'm all for that happening next Friday. That'd be very, very fun and exciting. Maybe he finds a way to love the Leafs in blue and white. I don't know about that one.
That'd be the best. Wouldn't that be the best storyline, Wish?
Yeah.
That would be incredible. I mean, listen, as a Devils guy, I look at him and say, oh, that's everything that this team lacks in a 5'11" frame. You know, the forward championship. Yeah, on a good day, championship pedigree, just annoying to play against. A guy who's done it before, a leader. I mean, like all that stuff is wrapped up in the little ball of hate for that team. But I mean, like you said, everybody's going to want to be in that business if he becomes available. And I think it's, you know, as much as I think, I would probably put it at like 70-30 that he stays.
Yeah.
But that's a strong 30. Yeah. That's like a 30 I can't ignore.
I like that. Well, Wish, we appreciate you jumping on. Safe travels. Enjoy tomorrow's stadium series. Looking forward to hearing about it.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. That's Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. Headed to the stadium series, which is tomorrow. 90,000 fans projected to be there. Red Wings, Blue Jackets at Ohio Stadium on Saturday around 6 p.m. It's going to be awesome. And mentioned it won't be the greatest number, but probably the second best attendance number. The top one ever was 105,000 at Michigan Stadium for the Winter Classic, which was Leafs and Red Wings on January 1st.
I guess the Red Wings in Michigan will have that over the Buckeyes.
It's pretty close, though.
And Blue Jackets.
And then this will top the second largest one, which was what Wish was talking about, the Cotton Bowl on January 1st for the Winter Classic between the Stars and the Predators. Was that the one with the Corey Perry walkout?
The long walk for Corey Perry, yeah. Yes.
That's one of my favorite shots of him walking slowly into the stands. Okay, a lot there from Wish.
Yeah, just very quickly on you know, the Marchand piece. The fact that the Bruins haven't shut it down is interesting, right?
Yeah.
Like when it's your captain, when it's a guy who's been there forever, a legendary Bruin, won a Stanley Cup, you'd think that, yeah, you'd want to nip it in the bud, but they are keeping it open, and that's why it's, I guess, the strong 30 or the interesting 30, as Greg outlined. I just feel like if you don't want to do it and you're not going to embarrass, and I don't, embarrass might be a strong word, your captain, or make that move, I think you already would have shut it down. And maybe that's not best practices, because if someone's going to throw a huge deal at you, like, you got to do what's best for the organization. But some people are sort of above this discussion, above this sort of scenario. And I would have thought Marchand would have crossed that threshold, but they're very quiet about what's happening. And the silence is interesting.
I mean, the same can be said for the other captain that's in trade rumors, Braden Schenn. Could have two captains.
Sure. It's.
I know he hasn't been a full forever.
I mean,
Marchand's a
won
guy.
Won a Stanley Cup with them.
Yeah. But both of those captains are involved in trade discussions right now, and one, I don't know which one feels more likely.
I'd say Shen feels a little bit more. Shen's younger. I mean, Marchand's almost 37. Shen's a little bit younger. There's going to be
So he had his 1,000th game last night, and all the conversation was he loves being a blue.
Yeah, but there's going to be a next phase of his career. He does a couple of years left on his deal, and that's why he's more appetizing or appealing, I guess, than Marchand in some ways. Also plays a centerized position. But I think with Shen, there might be some knowledge inside their camp that, okay, it might look different in a couple years because maybe the Blues are in a completely different phase. Maybe there's going to be more money elsewhere. It's just with Marchand, it's like, okay, you're playing out the string on a career. With Shen, it's like, okay, what's the next phase going to look like? Is it going to be here or is it going to be elsewhere? I think age is really the only thing that's different between the two.
Still difficult in both cases, move a captain mid-season. Okay, so a couple of things. As we mentioned, we got Leafs and Rangers. That's a regional game here on Sportsnet Ontario at 7 p.m. It looks like it'll be Reeves and Rempe in the lineup tonight, so you could get fight night at Madison Square Gardens. It's Reeves' first game in 24 days, so he's being specifically put in the lineup tonight to probably fight Rempe.
Yeah, I mean, Craig Berube, a couple things from him that were, like, surprisingly candid today, like openly talking about why Reeves is in because Rempe can do this, and it's like he's almost advertising that there probably should be a heavyweight bout in the middle of Madison Square Garden. And then the Shen piece, too, like, openly saying how much he loves the guy, that he went out and called him and told him how proud of you.
I'm That's paraphrasing. That's not tampering.
It's not.
No, he said, I love that player. I love that guy.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't really talk about his guys as much as he's talking about Braden Shen with all of this going on and clearly some connection between potentially Braden Shen and a deal with the Maple Leafs. But he was surprisingly forthright with a lot of his feelings and his intentions, whether it's with a guy he might want to see play for his team or just a fight tonight in New York.
Okay, so we have a couple things we can go through from 32 Thoughts and from some other tidbits of news around the NHL. I want to ask you about something that Kipper said. He said he expects Minton or Cowan to be gone pretty much this time next week. I think it's been a while since...
That was on Leafs Morning Skate.
Yeah, since he felt like he was what we were really going to see, a Minton or a Cowan or even Ben Danford. I heard Elliot today on the Fan Hockey Show talking about using those guys as real chips. Like, I don't know. It feels like that's pushing it all in. Is your opinion of this Leafs trade deadline that you're ready to part with a Minton, a Cowan, a Danford, or that first round pick next year, I think it is?
Yeah, I mean, I think the calculus is pretty simple here. The Leafs do actually have heavy lifting to do if they're going to be a more complete team. There's a couple holes that are pretty obvious on the roster. Third line center, Braden Shen fills that. A right shot defenseman, his brother could fill that. There's clear need to make sizable upgrades if you're putting truly your best foot forward. In order to make a sizable upgrade in the absence of having a first round pick this year, Minton or Cowan are pretty much the only trade chips. There's a 2026 first rounder, and that could go too. Ben Danford's stock isn't what Cowan or Minton's are. If you're going to make a sizable deal, if you're going to make something of substance happen over the next 7 days, it's going to cost Minton or Cowan. So I guess Kipper thinks something pretty sizable is going to happen in terms of a trade involving the Maple Leafs, and you can't really get around moving one of those prized pieces that you have sort of in the queue here.
Yeah, I think that sounds fair. I think the more you look at the Eastern Conference and where the other teams are stacking up and how this Maple Leafs team has really solid goaltending, for example, something we couldn't have said, you know, every single season going into it, I feel like it's maybe time to get less sentimental about the Mintons and the Cowans and the Danfords and just push them into the middle.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let them be free.
I mean, it depends. I mean, it's all what the situation is. Like, under no circumstances, I don't think they can.
Maybe for Colton Parayko, I'd be into it.
Yeah, I just don't think you can do a rental. Like, it has to be someone with terms, someone who helps you for multiple years. Retention would be great. Rentals, I don't think this team can do it anymore.
I think they're on the same page. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We got some more time to go through some of the top stories of the evening, wrap up the week. Tim Reynolds will join us, and then Smith and Jones on the radio-only segment to get you set for Raptors and the Bulls tonight. That's on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So we'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the next hour. We're going to chat with Tim Reynolds, the Associated Press, in about 10 minutes. We've got a great slate of basketball on the network. And then at 7 o'clock, we'll shift over to Sportsnet 590 The Fan and just chat with Eric Smith and Paul Jones, who will be calling the game tonight. We got Raptors on the road against the Bulls. That's a 7:30 start. So we'll tee it up with those guys on the radio-only segment. Before we chat a little basketball, Embiid news. We've got some Blue Jays news as well to go through. Let's get our best bets out of the way.
Sure, let's do it.
And that way we can focus on the action tonight. I am going to go with a little homer's parlay tonight. I like the Leafs and I like the Raptors. Leafs on the road against the Rangers. I just feel like this is a good spot for them. They were pretty light favorites. And when you can get the Leafs at around like minus 110, 115, I'm going to parlay with the Raptors, which might be what bites me, but I'm feeling good about the Raptors. I'm playing the Bulls. The Bulls are not really great either. And Raptors could win. This is a winnable game for the Raptors. They have a lot of winnable games coming up. But I think I saw that the Bulls have dropped 7 of their past 8 games. I just feel good about the Raps tonight. So I'm going to do a little homer's parlay, put them together.
Plus 306. Two teams that haven't been too interested in winning, Raptors and Bulls. Raptors though, like, again, the ethical tank. I don't really know if we can get too, like, into that, but the Raptors have always had an effort. The Raptors have always put best foot forward. The Raptors seem to be caring more, maybe, than the Bulls at this point. So this might be one of those ones that you're like, did they really need that? But they may just, in fact, need it. Those players, that is. I'm going to go to Sportsnet Plus in the NBA. OKC. It hasn't been an OKC bet in a while for me. They're in Atlanta taking on the Hawks. Interesting times right now for OKC. They lost like a 23-point comeback game from the Minnesota Timberwolves. Then they were getting outplayed for 3 quarters against Brooklyn and ended up putting the clamps on the Nets in the fourth quarter and winning that game. But two games that haven't been very Thunder-like. And now they get the Hawks, and they're 10.5-point favorites.
You're down on the Thunder.
I'm not. I just, since I'm number one Thunder fan, I kind of know what's going on in terms of the rotations and trying to get Chet Holmgren into lineups that are a little bit different and making him mesh with Isaiah Hartenstein. They're kind of going through a little bit of an exploratory phase here. No, they're looking for lineups. They're looking for five-man units. They're trying different things that are like, okay, if you just clearly make this tweak, this game would go better. But they want to see what they have ahead of the playoffs. So they're kind of exploring different things at the moment. And they're giving up some points, but they're also scoring points. So I'm going to take the over 247.5. That's a huge number. Over 247.5, plus 10.5 for the Hawks. Parlay that together, plus 272. These are just the type of games OKC has been playing lately. They've let bad teams or teams that are mediocre hang around, but they just get into run-and-gun track meets with them. So I'll take the over, and the Hawks keep it close.
Okay, we do have that game on Sportsnet Plus, as you mentioned. We also have the Knicks and Memphis at 8 p.m. on Sportsnet Plus. If you're looking for our doubleheader on Sportsnet 1, it's Cleveland-Boston, which is great game, 7:30 start, and then the Clippers and the Lakers at 10 p.m. It's also Luka's birthday, and I didn't see that before I gave you my best bet, so ladder some Luka.
Okay.
Luka night.
Luka ladders.
Okay, so a couple things to go through.
It's the second night of a back-to-back,
yeah,
isn't it?
Whatever, it's his birthday, though.
I think he went for like 6 for 20 last night.
He didn't look great. It's okay. He got the triple-double of the day, and I put the triple-double on the screen, so.
That's all that matters.
If I don't put it up there, maybe he doesn't do it. Okay, so a little Blue Jays action. They had a doubleheader. They are currently up on Sportsnet East, West, and Pacific, I believe. Yeah, nailed that against the Yankees, a part of a doubleheader. But they had a really, like, interesting day. If you wanted to watch the Blue Jays baseball, today was the day. Varsho hits a home run on his first at-bat after the rotator cuff surgery.
Didn't stop him from lifting weights. He looks put on 15 jacked. To 20 pounds.
Yeah, so that's a great sign. Like, literally first at-bat home run. Bassett made his regular preseason debut, 2.5 innings, 36 pitches, striking out 4. We also saw Jeff Hoffman for the first time, who pitched a scoreless inning, looking forward to what he does for this team. Also, he had a great interview with Blair and Barker, so you can check that out on the podcast feed. It's just awesome to listen to him talk. He seems like a great clubhouse guy to have around, but also was really forthright and honest in his discussion. So you should check that interview out with Blair and Barker. Right now, the Blue Jays are playing the Yankees, and we're going to see the Santander debut, and Arjun Namala will be making his preseason debut as well. So you don't have to change the channel from us, but if you are going to, that's a good place to put it. So Blue Jays baseball.
Indeed it is. four or five that you mentioned there, obviously Arjun Anamala, excited to see him. But these are like key guys to the success of the Blue Jays this year that had, you know, I guess notable days to a certain extent. Again, we can't get too excited about, you know, Varsho taking the second pitch he sees in spring out of the yard, but it's better than
not opposite. Doing that.
Same with Bassett, like utmost importance that he is able to be closer to the guy who he was at the first half of last year as opposed to the second half of last year. I think there were some extenuating circumstances, a guy a little older in his career, not really happy with, you know, a team like the Blue Jays basically throwing in the towel in the second half of last year. But Bassett's going to have to be better. Bassett has to be probably great for this team to reach potential. Varsho has to be good, has to finally deliver on that promise of offense. And Santander, like we know, it's going to be important for him to finally be that guy in the middle of the order. And you mentioned Jeff Hoffman. Maybe there's not as much, you know, question about what he's going to provide. I think you should have the confidence that he's going to be able to fill the role previously held by Jordan Romano. But these are important guys who had big days. And I think for that reason, an encouraging spring training day for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Okay, they are currently up, yes, as I mentioned, on Sportsnet East, West, and Pacific, second part of a doubleheader, and they are playing the Yankees. Okay, so a couple things NBA-wise before we get to Tim, who's going to join us in about 5 minutes. Joel Embiid officially ruled out for the remainder of the season. It's an interesting timeline. I kind of was looking back at it because, you know, this year he's only played 19 games, which we know it's been a bit of a rough year for him. This team in general is been struggling at the fact of not having him in the lineup. They're old. They have no identity. They've been dealing with a lot of injuries. But last year, he played 39 games. So this is a bit of a pattern, as we know. He had that surgery in February, comes back in April, plays for some playoffs, plays in the Olympics, and then acknowledges that he didn't have enough time to recover post-surgery. And now it's February. He only played 19 games. He's going to be out for the rest of the season. Like, I don't know what the pathway to Joel Embiid being A, healthy, or B, reliable, or see worth the price of admission at this point, because it's been a brutal stretch and the Sixers have lost 9 straight games and 11 of 12. But even when Embiid, Paul George, and Tyrese Maxey are all in the lineup, they're only 7-8. Like, it's not like, okay, once we get all these bodies, like, it's a completely different thing. It's just a disaster.
Yeah, thank God the Eagles won the Super Bowl, because Philly would definitely be feeling it right now with this Sixers season. Yeah, I mean, the thing about the NBA, if you get it wrong on a superstar, you get it wrong on a max contract, like, there's nothing you can do about it. The $55 million future annual salary for Joel Embiid is it may be the most immovable thing in sports. And then you look at, you know, some future betting odds that are throwing out the Raptors.
And the Raptors are the number one team.
Again,
thanks.
That would be the sort of gamble that would make me lose a lot of faith in what the Raptors are trying to accomplish, because that is ultimate hold on and hope that something good can happen to you when really there's no other plan. Because Joel Embiid has basically shown that he is a non-asset at this point, a hugely negative asset, someone who makes so much money and is holding up a entire franchise hostage to a certain extent. Like, guys like Tyrese Maxey should be playing important games, should be a star in this league, but he's teammates with two guys in Paul George and Joel Embiid, who are complete boat anchors, weighing this team down, weighing Nick Nurse down, weighing Tyrese Maxey down, giving that organization essentially
no way out. But Paul George is
no
stopping this podcast, Justin. He's focused.
That's, I mean, that probably can't be a bad thing.
You know who can take over the podcast? Joel Embiid.
There you go. I think you can just transfer
transfer
the IP. It'll work out perfectly.
Okay, well, this is perfect timing because we can continue this conversation with our next guest, Tim Reynolds, Associated Press NBA writer, joins us. Tim, it's been a while. How's it going?
Hi, it has been a while. How is everybody?
We're doing well. We have so much to talk to you about. I kind of want to start with hockey, though, because you were at a great game last night, right? Oilers-Panthers rematch of Stanley Cup Finals. Obviously, the Oilers falling short. We've been discussing the Oilers. They look a little, not sluggish, like discombobulated. Maybe they're working through some chemistry issues. Like, what did you see from that performance?
I saw a team that came out and was hell-bent from the jump to try to set a tone, and the Panthers didn't allow it. And, you know, honestly, I can't say it's time to worry about the Oilers, because they're still the Oilers and they're fine. I mean, they're only 2 points out of first, and I know the West is a mess, But they have lost five in a row. They've given up a lot of goals in these five games, which is obviously not a winnable formula when you get into the postseason. You just got the sense that last night meant more to them than just a regular season game. It meant a lot to them. They had a bad loss to Florida in December. Obviously, their first time back in Sunrise since June 24th last night. There were guys slamming their sticks on the ice at the end. I mean, they took two bad penalties in the last 3 minutes to sort of take away any realistic chance they had of a comeback. It's a frustrated team right now for a lot of reasons. I think, you know, one game left on the trip, there's going to be a lot of soul searching probably the next few days. But the good news is they're still right there in the West, and they still have, let's see, two of the best players in the NHL. They're going to be fine.
There you go. I like that. Not a great sign that the Oilers, because, you know, we've seen them kind of sleepwalk at times, but when they're really into it and it still doesn't go their way, you know, there are some questions about how talented the team is at the depths and whether or not they can do something ahead of the deadline. But let's get to the association. And we were talking about Embiid before you came in, season over. Over under 0.5 good days ahead for the 76ers and Joel Embiid, Tim.
If we define ahead by the next 365 days, I would say zero.
Oh.
Because it just seems like rest, rehab, anti-inflammatories, that ship seems like it has sailed. And if it is a surgical option for Joel Embiid, it's a major surgery. If he's looking at surgery, it's going to be a major one. And that's a very big man with a very big knee. It does not heal on normal human time. It's very realistic right now to take the $55 million next year and say he's not going to play. And then you've got 59, 64, 68, I think are the three estimates for the extension. There's going to be a lot of sleepless nights in Philadelphia because what do you do? If he's having surgery, I don't think he plays next season. So what does Paul George ask to do? What is Kyle Lowry entering year 20 next year asked to do? He wanted, I think, to end it in Philly. Does he come home? Does he go to Toronto? Which I kind of would root for as I'm a unabashed Kyle Lowry fan.
Yeah.
I kind of like to see him go to Toronto and see what he can do with Scotty and Brandon. So there's just a lot of questions right now, and there's not one good sign that you can point to in Philadelphia with Joel Embiid. And that's not good for Philly, and that's not good for the NBA.
Yeah, I'm empathizing with Tyrese Maxey, but I should have been doing that with Kyle Lowry, yes. our legendary Raptor. Okay, so
priorities.
They're misplaced, evidently. Okay, so, you know, interesting time in the NBA because, you know, a lot of people are trying to see, you know, who's going to win the title. They look at the first 3 months of the season. There's the 40-20 rule, winning 40 games before losing 20. So I wonder now, like, how much hay is in the barn when you're looking at who could potentially win the title this season? Because, you know, just last year, Dallas made a bunch of moves before the deadline, and they went to a final. This year, the Lakers rejuvenate themselves with Luka Doncic and look like a team that might be able to challenge OKC. We got a lot of really good teams playing tonight, and the best game is Boston and Cleveland. But when you look at the top end, the best teams in the NBA, is there a late runner? Is there someone who's kind of in the middle of the standings now can challenge the Celtics or the OKC Thunder or the Cleveland Cavaliers, given how much they've accomplished so far this year?
I don't know if there's a late runner. I don't know if there's a team in the middle. There's a team that none of us are talking about, and it's the Denver Nuggets, who are 2 years removed from a title, are playing pretty well right now. I don't know if Jokic wins MVP or not. I think there's going to be some voter fatigue. I think there's going to be, and rightly so, I'm not saying Shea is an undeserving candidate, but I think some people are going to be tired of voting for Nikola. So either way, though, he's one or two in the MVP race. Nobody's talking about Denver, and it puzzles me as to why. Obviously, right now, the Lakers are playing as well as anybody. The passing already between LeBron and Luka, you can see what that opens up. Austin Reeves comes down on the first possession last night and hits one from like Burbank. Like they're just playing a different basketball right now. So obviously, to use your word, rejuvenated. The Lakers are very much rejuvenated right now. And LeBron looks like a young man of 34 or 35 right now for him. So that's obviously working. The Cleveland-Boston game tonight, it's the two best teams in the East. I think we can all reasonably agree on that. It's kind of a big game. If Cleveland wins, they're pretty much locked up, the one seed, if they get this one tonight. And I don't really see Boston taking a run at them anyway for the one seed. I don't think Boston cares about being the two seed. I just think it'd be pretty much wrapped up tonight. There's Denver, there's OKC, there's the Lakers. Nobody talks about Memphis. Nobody's wondering, like, we're all sort of wondering, what is Dallas going to look like when AD comes back? Like, will it really work? It worked for three quarters, but will it work in a four-seven game series? So to answer your question, somebody from the middle, I don't really see it. I think we're down to the six or seven teams that we can say these are the teams that are going to be the last one standing. But the one nobody's talking about is Denver, and that one's kind of baffling to me.
Even when Steph drops 56 last night and, you know, they're 7-1 with Jimmy Butler, I got that feeling of
drawing up plays.
I'm like, okay, maybe we're getting that magical
Happy
Steph
Jimmy.
Curry back. But, you know, they've almost played themselves or climbed out of the play-in well. I just don't know how many more Steph Curry nights you can have like that, but then you also don't want to count out any more Steph Curry nights like that. Like, it's that conundrum in a sense. Like, where do you look at what Golden State can do down the stretch?
So I go back to Paris. Let's just take the last 12 months of Steph. He has the huge game against Serbia. Well, he can't possibly do it again against France.
Yep.
Kind of did it again against France. I mean, the last 2.5 minutes of that game are, I mean, instant Hall of Fame stuff, as if he wasn't going in already. He was phenomenal last night. And the thing about Steph, when Steph is phenomenal, Steph makes phenomenal look easy. Steph makes stuff we've never seen before look so ordinary. If he is revving up, if this is truly the last dance, the last run, as Draymond has called it, if Jimmy Butler, again, let's go back to the word from earlier, let's go back to rejuvenation. If Jimmy Butler just being there has opened up defenses to the point where you're trying to single cover Stephen Curry on the wing like they're off the bounce, forget it. I mean, he is still the best shooter in the world. He's the biggest game player in the world. He shows up at all the big times. He's the guy you count on for one shot for your season. You count on Stephen Curry. Can they do it four times? We don't know. I think there are some matchups in the West that are great for them. I think there are some matchups in the West that are disastrous for them. If healthy, I would be, even though I didn't mention them 2 minutes ago, I'm going to backtrack on that just a little bit. If healthy, if everyone on the Warriors is healthy, if Steph, Draymond, and Jimmy are healthy, if the bench is doing their job, there's going to be very few teams that I say are going to beat them four times. Steph doesn't need to score 56
right
to do it. Like, Jimmy's not going to have 5 or 7 or whatever he had every game last night. That's the way the game sort of went. But knowing that Steph still has that Stephness in him, that probably scares the heck out of a lot of teams.
Yeah, I think in a single series, like, you can look at it as a real possibility for them to win or solve that problem. But solving 3 problems in the West, I think, might be a little bit too much to ask from Steph and Jimmy at this point. But we shall see. OKC is not going to relinquish the number one seed. Excuse me. But what do you think out of the play-in group would be the worst possible matchup for OKC in round one?
Well, I think we've established that Golden State is not going to be in the play-in. The way they're going right now, I don't think they're going to fall to that 7, 8, 9, 10 spot. So the team I don't want to see if I'm OKC in the play-in is Dallas. Because I don't think Dallas is going to make a huge run until AD comes back. I mean, do you want to see Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis in round one if you're OKC? Yes, you made it to the second round last year, but you're going to have to beat 2 Titans to get out of round one. And I think Dallas, when they get their guys back, when they get healthy, assuming they do, the enormity of the chip on the Dallas Mavericks' shoulders going into the playoffs, everybody writing us off, we can't win without Luka, we're the 8 seed, whatever they're going to end up being, you do not want to see that team coming if you're OKC, because that's a team that's going to be fearless on the road. They don't care about having to win a road game. A game 7 on the road will not daunt them whatsoever. OKC is going to get tested right out of the gate. I think that's the worst of all the first round matchups. That's the worst possible one for them.
And PJ Washington is a Titan too when he plays the Oklahoma City Thunder. So maybe 3 to deal with if and when we get there. You mentioned the Knicks a little bit. They beat Denver twice this year, but they're 0-7 combined against OKC, Boston, and Cleveland. You know, that could be, if you take Denver aside, that's gatekeeper stuff, right? You can't beat one of those elite teams, and you do pretty well against everyone else. There's a lot of talent there, though, and there's the opportunity to get a round under your belt and go head-to-head with Boston potentially in the 2-3. Do you think the Knicks have a puncher's chance in the East, or have they kind of revealed themselves as somewhat flawed here in the last couple of weeks and months?
Again, if healthy. Yes, because Jalen Brunson is that dude. Josh Hart is that dude. Carl Anthony Towns, this is your moment. This is your time. Are you going to be there or not? Are you going to show up in the biggest moments? And I'll say this, like, we don't talk enough. And being a native upstate New Yorker, maybe this is a teeny tiny bit of Homer in me. We don't talk enough about what the Garden is like when the Garden is popping. That is a major, major factor. It could help the Knicks an awful lot. We know that they are depth challenged. We know Tibbs is going to play seven or eight guys until there's nothing left on the tires. We get all that. They're not a deep team. Totally understand that. Jalen Brunson is as tough as they get. Josh Hart gets every loose ball. I'm coming to you from Miami tonight where the Heat are going to play the Pacers. I can tell you this, Eric Spoelstra, Josh Hart is one of his favorite players in the league because he does everything coaches want to do. He is such a pest in a seven-game series. He could be such a pest to a 2-3 Knicks-Boston matchup. They will not be afraid about going to Boston, just like we said about Dallas going on the road potentially to OKC or whatever. The Knicks won't be afraid to go to Boston. The Garden will be in anyone's head that goes there for a playoff series, including the champion Celtics. So, yeah, I do give the Knicks a puncher's chance.
Well, we got our Maple Leafs at the Garden tonight, so hopefully it fares well for them. Though it's no playoff atmosphere, it'll be a fun one. Tim,
they should not be afraid there tonight.
You don't
think? They should absolutely not be afraid there.
The Rangers, though, they get someone to fill in for Adam Fox's injury, but I know, I think I'm not really
not in time for puck drop tonight.
Not in time. Tim, we'll let you go. We really appreciate you coming on. We're up against the clock, but it was great to chat. We'll have you on again. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
That's great. It's Tim Reynolds, of course, of the Associated Press. And we got a lot of basketball on the network tonight, as we mentioned. Let's just go through the schedule one more time. Cleveland, Boston. So this one's, I think, your favorite, even though you're an OKC guy. But
it's the biggest game for sure.
Potential Eastern Conference finals.
As Tim mentioned, Cavs can kind of lock up the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, which is key. I mean, Boston will have to go through New York to get to Cleveland, and if it's vice versa, I mean, the Celtics would be even stronger favorites to get through. But it is the fourth and final meeting. Celtics won two of the three. All three games were pretty close. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some, you know, there's still some skeptics over whether or not the Cavaliers are legit despite the record. Can they beat Boston? If Celtics do win three of four, and maybe it's a little bit more emphatic tonight, I think it's just going to strengthen Boston's hold with the shortest odds to come out of the Eastern Conference. I'd like to see the Cavs have a big game and make people think a little bit twice about
the Cavs are on
Celtics
what, an
going back
winning streak right now.
They just keep winning games. Like, it's
every time I look, it's like their streak is 6, 7, 8, 9, and then they lose one and then they go on and that, like, they just roll.
Yeah, the last loss was to Boston. But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you're in the Western Conference, is such a gauntlet, and OKC is, I think, one game behind Cleveland for the best record. But the quality of competition playing more Western Conference teams is crazy. I mean, there's a lot of punching bags in the Eastern Conference for Cleveland to rack up rounds against.
Okay, so we've got a 7:30 tip on Sportsnet 1. That'll be Cleveland-Boston. And then Clippers and the Lakers tonight, a 10 p.m. start. Mm-hmm. That's a great doubleheader. Those are both on Sportsnet 1. If you're looking for the other action, Sportsnet Plus, OKC, Atlanta, 7:30, and then the Knicks and Memphis, as we just talked about, at 9 p.m. Up next on Sportsnet Ontario will be Leafs and Rangers. And then we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back on the radio, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, talk with Smith and Jones about Raptors and Chicago. That's a 7:30 tip. So lots going on.
Lots going on. A lot of names connected to the Maple Leafs. What's the most interesting one that's kind of floated by?
I think you said that one earlier this week. I just think he's like the perfect defensive.
Yeah, and Bukala talking about him a little bit more.
Yeah, it was Books. Fan Hockey Show 2 days ago, maybe.
I think on the morning show today, too.
Oh, well, Books has actually been on every show all week. Like, this guy needs a break because next week he's on our deadline coverage.
It's that season. It's that season. You got to use Books every day.
Yeah,
no, it'd be silly not to.
I love Books, and he was like gushing about how he kind of underrated Colton Parayko, or maybe didn't give him like the, and now he said, I grossly underestimated how good he is. So that, when he says that, I'm like, Colton Parayko.
That's the deal for Toronto. Like, do you just go and ransack the Blues and give everything from your prospect capital for guys with term who have won before? Like, that's what I can get behind. Not the rentals. Not the Mikko Rantanen rental.
No rentals.
We can't be doing the Mikko Rantanen
rental. Kipper says maybe Mikko Rantanen.
Which would be absolutely crazy.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and chat with Smith and Jones. That was The Fan pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now.